The speaker came out very forcefully and said it again today that the governor has lost the confidence of the Democratic majority in the Assembly. Now, on the Senate side, the makeup of the Senate at this point in time is not that different than the makeup of the Assembly. So the question is, where would the governor find the votes?
Hi there, it's WAMC News Director Ian Pickus. And on this episode of the WAMC News Podcast, the latest on the impeachment inquiry into Governor Andrew Cuomo, the embattled New York Democrat. I'll speak with two different Phils about the situation. First, a member of the Assembly Judiciary Committee, Phil Steck, a Democrat from Colony. The committee met on Monday to discuss the next steps in the impeachment probe. After that, I speak with the Washington Post national political correspondent, Philip Bump, about the rise and fall of Governor Cuomo. First, my conversation with Assemblyman Phil Steck.
We heard more from our attorneys is what the evidence is on all of those issues. As I expected, our attorneys have not been finding anything different from the Attorney General's report, but like the Attorney General invited the governor to provide evidence to the Attorney General, so our committee is inviting the governor to submit evidence by the end of the 13th. We're going to have a meeting on the Monday thereafter, and we will be planning for public hearings at which the evidence will be described, and there will be some experts offered on the impeachment process and also on sexual harassment, so voters have a real understanding of what's at stake here.
If the governor resigns before that process is completed, will that process continue?
It could, because like with Donald Trump, you can be impeached when you're not in office and then tried when you're not in office for the purpose of perhaps barring the governor from holding office in the future. Back when Governor Sulzer was impeached, he was specifically allowed to hold office again, and he ran successfully for the New York State Assembly. But I couldn't really see this governor doing that. We also have to take into account what the cost would be of continuing the prosecution if the governor stepped aside. So it's a little premature at this point to say what might happen if the governor did, in fact, resign.
The governor's lawyers have already begun laying out some defenses or counterclaims in recent days. And one of the governor's lawyers said the governor himself would be addressing the claims from Brittany Commisso, a.k.a. Executive Assistant Number One, who claims the governor groped her in the mansion. As your committee is gathering testimony, presumably the governor will have some more evidence on his side to present. Is there anything that could change your mind at this stage that the governor needs to resign?
I thought the Attorney General's report was extremely thorough. It laid out a very powerful case. I felt the governor should resign. I called for his resignation in February. Now, why did I do that? Because being someone who lives in this community, who knows people who work in the or have worked in the executive chamber, who I've interviewed at the executive chamber, the atmosphere there that was described by the Attorney General in her report of fear, intimidation, bullying, and having people that were basically afraid to even disagree with the governor for fear of losing their jobs. That's why I knew that when these women came forward, that it was highly likely that they were telling the truth. But the best statement I saw in the Attorney General's report was from someone who had worked in the White House, presumably for President Obama, and said that this atmosphere of intimidation, bullying, no one can disagree with the governor, is no way to run a state government. So I think that the governor should resign, and I think the Attorney General's report is just an exclamation mark on that.
I mentioned a number of other scandals that the governor is facing that will be part of this impeachment probe. What questions do you still have, separate from the sexual harassment allegations, in terms of the governor and his administration and their conduct?
Well, I think it's pretty clear that the governor used state resources to write the book. He was requested permission to write the book from a organization, JACOB, which he created. And JACOB gave him a list of rules, and the rules were violated. So that's that issue. On the nursing home deaths, there are two different ways of looking at the data. There's one data, if you interpret it one way, it's 6,000 deaths. If you interpret it another, it was 10,000 deaths. And I am confident that the lower number was chosen for political reasons, not on the merits.
Do you see any way in the next 6 to 8 weeks that Governor Andrew Cuomo could somehow survive here, maybe be acquitted in a Senate trial? I know that's getting ahead of where your committee is right now, but is there a future in which Governor Cuomo is still Governor Cuomo in 2022?
Well, Speaker Hastie, who's been very measured throughout this process, people were criticizing him, alleging that he was protecting the governor, which is obviously not the case. The speaker came out very forcefully and said it again today, that the governor has lost the confidence of the Democratic majority in the Assembly. Now, on the Senate side, the makeup of the Senate at this point in time is not that different than the makeup of the Assembly. So the question is, where would the governor find the votes to stay in office? He might be thinking, well, I appointed all 7 members of the Court of Appeals. Maybe they'll support me. But I think you've got some mountain of evidence compiled by the Attorney General of the state of New York, who hired 2 extremely accomplished attorneys to do the investigation so that it was independent of politics. I think it's very hard. It would be very hard to acquit someone of the charge of sexual harassment, surely.
That's Assemblyman Phil Steck, a Democrat from Colony and a member of the Assembly Judiciary Committee, which is now in earnest taking up its impeachment probe into Governor Andrew Cuomo. Assemblyman Steck, thank you so much for your time.
Okay, thank you, Ian.
All right, let's turn now to my talk with Washington Post journalist Philip Bump. I'm speaking to you within walking distance of the New York State Capitol, so I know how the story is going in Albany, but what about on the national scene?
Yeah, it's fascinating. I mean, obviously, Cuomo is someone who, over the course of the past year in particular, has really seen an elevated national profile in his response to the coronavirus pandemic in particular, the juxtaposition with Donald Trump at the time. But that has made him a target for many, both within his own party, but also on the right, that has served him particularly poorly in this moment with this report coming from the Attorney General's office. And so what we're seeing is this clamor of people pointing to Cuomo as an exemplar of all of the things that people will cite as problems with the political left. And so this has really become elevated to the national stage, in part because Cuomo himself was so adamant about being on that stage over the course of the past year.
It's really struck me to think back on where Cuomo was even a year ago, certainly during the pandemic, and where he is today. What do you make of that very swift change in his fortunes?
Well, it was fascinating because shortly before the pandemic, his approval ratings weren't that great, right? I mean, you know, he's always been contentious and I mean, I don't need to tell you this, but, you know, he has sort of prided himself on bucking his party, which has not made him a lot of friends. His approval ratings in the state prior to COVID were not particularly good. They soared at the first part of the pandemic, but then started to sag a bit, as was the case with other governors, including California's Gavin Newsom, as the pandemic wore on. So it's not as though this is someone who, to your point, was wildly popular over the course of his terms in office, right? I mean, there was a huge push from the left during the last 2 primary fights that he had that, you know, obviously he survived. But, you know, there's a lot of effort, particularly from the left, to try and unseat him. So this is someone who has positioned himself as being an outlier from the political scene and has, to some extent, left himself without as many allies as other politicians might have had.
one of those very close allies he did have until this week was President Joe Biden, who, when asked after the report came out, said he did believe it was time for Governor Cuomo to go. What import do you think that had on this dynamic?
I think that, so obviously President Biden said something similar at the outset when all these allegations first emerged. There are a lot of elected officials who, while they might want to make sure that there is still a solidly Democrat governor in the state of New York, which obviously is not at huge risk of not happening, they were in a position where they needed to, in order to be consistent, say, hey, this sort of behavior is not acceptable and he needs to resign. I think Joe Biden was one of those people that was sort of in that position. But, at the end of the day, I think that Cuomo has spent so much time saying, I don't need these other guys. My party is Cuomo, essentially. I don't know that Joe Biden weighing in really affects how Cuomo sees his position.
Well, let's talk about that. As we speak here in early August, the Assembly Judiciary Committee, which is in charge of the impeachment and would potentially bring articles forward, has accelerated its timeline. Do you see any way for Cuomo to stick it out and remain in office in the long term?
Yeah, I mean, look, New York politics is... It can be hard to sort of suss out where things are going to line up. We spent years seeing this really weird dynamic in Albany, and where Democrats were ostensibly in the majority, but then not. It's just the way in which these things shake out can be pretty unpredictable. And we are talking, obviously, within less than a week of the Attorney General's report. As time passes, it will become easier for that to be backgrounded by Cuomo, right? And if it gets backgrounded by Cuomo, then that makes it easier for him to defend his position. We have the Delta variant. Obviously, one of the things he was very pointed in his response to that report in mentioning, hey, we still got the pandemic out there, a way of reminding New Yorkers who do still broadly approve of the way he handled the pandemic last year, that's a way of reminding them, hey, this thing is still looming, and it is, right? I mean, it may be the case that there's new pressure on folks not to sort of switch captains of the boat as we're going through particularly rocky waters, which, I think also plays to Cuomo's advantage. So, I don't think this is a sure thing at all. Were I to put money on it, I would still assume he probably would be ousted. But a lot can happen over a pretty short period of time.
Are politicians taking a different approach to the question of whether to resign? Seeing people like, Ralph Northam, for instance, who was dealing with his own blackface scandal, facing very loud calls to resign and just didn't. And, now he's still governor.
Yeah, no, it's a great point. One of the things that we've seen increasingly is the nationalization of state and local politics. And so what that means is there's a really heightened sense of partisanship. And so we see Democrats... and you even heard this in response to the Attorney General's report, a lot of, hey, why are you going after Cuomo, blah, 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 blah. That was very much predicated on partisan loyalty. And so there is more space, I think, now because this huge partisan struggle is seen as so existential for the country to really have people rally behind members of their own party, regardless of what they do. Obviously, we saw this very much with President Trump and his supporters, but I think it has come into play in other situations. Obviously, the Northam situation in Virginia was different because that was something that happened a long time ago. What happened with Cuomo is allegedly, happened within the past 12 months or so in some cases, and so it's much more salient to the political conversation. But it is the case that he will have more defenders than he might have, say, 15 years ago, simply by virtue of how heightened partisanship is in the country.
I just want to follow up on something that you just mentioned to wrap up here. Governor Cuomo certainly does retain some support in New York State, and many people have been writing to the station, although it's not a scientific measure by any stretch, mm-hmm. saying, hey, where's the investigation into people like President Trump? And when they see people like Congresswoman Elise Stefanik, the number three House Republican, who's really made hay out of Cuomo's troubles, yet remains as staunch a Trump ally as there can be, they really object to that dissonance. Do Republicans and Democrats deal with issues like sexual harassment in different ways?
I think generally it is probably true that, yes, they do. I don't have polling at hand to show that, but obviously one of the things we see here is that politics is fundamentally a Machiavellian industry, right? That you do what you need to do in order to try and get ahead. I don't think anyone's surprised that Elise Stefanik is going after Andrew Cuomo on this issue and not going after President Trump. And I don't think anyone would be surprised that Democrats would be frustrated by that. This sort of, you know, whataboutism that we have a lot of in politics these days really speaks to a sort of fundamental lack of consistency that a lot of people have about politics. They want their side to win. They want the other side to lose. And if that means they have to be inconsistent, then they go ahead and be inconsistent. And one of the things they do is they say, well, the other side's inconsistent too. So it's fine for me to be inconsistent.
That's Philip Bump, national political correspondent for The Washington Post. Thank you so much for your time.
You bet. Thanks, man.
All right. That does it for this episode of the WAMC News Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. Until next time, I'm Ian Pickus.